Chapter 11. The long and the short of it is, gentlemen, that it is better to do nothing, better conscious inertia, and so hurrah for underground. Though I have said that I envy the normal man to the last drop of my bile, yet I should not care to be in his place such as he is now, though I shall not cease envying him. No, no, anyway the underground life is more advantageous. There, at any rate, one can owe, but even now I am lying. I am lying because I know myself that it is not underground that is better, but something different, quite different, for which I am thirsting, but which I cannot find. Damn underground. I will tell you another thing that would be better, and that is, if I myself believed in anything of what I have just written. I swear to you, gentlemen, there is not one thing, not one word of what I have written that I really believe. That is, I believe it, perhaps, but at the same time I feel and suspect that I am lying like a cobbler. Then, why have you written all this? You will say to me. I ought to put you underground for 40 years without anything to do and then come to you in your cellar to find out what stage you have reached. How can a man be left with nothing to do for 40 years? Isn't that shameful? Is that humiliating? You will say, perhaps, wagging your heads contemptuously. You thirst for life and try to settle the problems of life by a logical tangle. And how persistent, how insolent are your sallies, and at the same time, what a scare you are in. You talk nonsense and are pleased with it. You say impudent things and are in continual alarm and apologizing for them. You declare that you are afraid of nothing and at the same time try to ingratiate yourself in our good opinion. You declare that you are gnashing your teeth and at the same time you try to be witty so as to amuse us. You know that your witticisms are not witty, but you are evidently well satisfied with their literary value. You may, perhaps, have really suffered, but you have no respect for your own suffering. You may have sincerity, but you have no modesty. Out of the pettiest vanity, you expose your sincerity to publicity and ignominy. You doubtlessly mean to say something, but hide your last word through fear, because you have not the resolution to utter it and only have a cowardly impudence. You boast of consciousness, but you are not sure of your ground, for though your mind works, yet your heart is darkened and corrupt, and you cannot have a full, genuine consciousness without a pure heart. And how intrusive you are, how you insist and grimace. Lies, lies, lies. Of course, I have myself made up all the things you say. That, too, is from underground. I have been for 40 years listening to you through a crack under the floor. I have invented them myself. There was nothing else I could invent. It is no wonder that I have learned it by heart and it has taken a literary form. But can you really be so credulous as to think that I will print all this and give it to you to read too? And another problem, why do I call you gentlemen? Why do I address you as though you really were my readers? Such confessions as I intend to make are never printed nor given to other people to read. Anyway, I am not strong-minded enough for that, and I don't see why I should be. But you see, a fancy has occurred to me, and I want to realize it at all costs. Let me explain. Every man has reminiscences which he would not tell to everyone, but only to his friends. He has other matters in his mind which he would not reveal even to his friends, but only to himself, and that in secret. But there are other things which a man is afraid to tell even to himself, and every decent man has a number of such things stored away in his mind. The more decent he is, the greater the number of such things in his mind. Anyway, I have only lately determined to remember some of my early adventures. Till now, I have always avoided them, even with a certain uneasiness. Now, when I am not only recalling them, but have actually decided to write an account of them, I want to try the experiment whether one can, even with oneself, be perfectly open and not take fright at the whole truth. I will observe, in parenthesis, that Heine says that a true autobiography is almost an impossibility, and that man is bound to lie about himself. He considers that Rousseau certainly told lies about himself in his confessions, and even intentionally lied, out of vanity. I am convinced that Heine is right. I quite understand how sometimes one may, out of sheer vanity, attribute regular crimes to oneself, and indeed I can very well conceive that kind of vanity. But Heine judged of people who made their confessions to the public. I write only for myself, and I wish to declare once and for all that if I write as though I were addressing readers, that is simply because it is easier for me to write in that form. It is a form, an empty form. I shall never have readers. I have made this plain already. I don't wish to be hampered by any restrictions in the compilation of my notes. I shall not attempt any system or method. I will jot things down as I remember them. but here, perhaps, someone will catch at the word and ask me, if you really don't reckon on readers, why do you make such compacts with yourself, and on paper too? That is, that you won't attempt any system or method, that you jot things down as you remember them, and so on and so on? Why are you explaining? Why do you apologize? Well, there it is, I answer. There is a whole psychology in all this, though. Perhaps it is simply that I am a coward. And perhaps that I purposely imagine an audience before me in order that I may be more dignified while I write. There are perhaps thousands of reasons. Again, what is my object precisely in writing? If it is not for the benefit of the public, why should I not simply recall these incidents in my own mind without putting them on paper? Quite so, but yet it is more imposing on paper. There is something more impressive in it. I shall be better able to criticize myself and improve my style. Besides, I shall perhaps obtain actual relief from writing. Today, for instance, I am particularly oppressed by one memory of a distant past. It came back vividly to my mind a few days ago and has remained haunting me like an annoying tune that one cannot get rid of, and yet I must get rid of it somehow. I have hundreds of such reminiscences, but at times someone stands out from the hundred and oppresses me. For some reason, I believe that if I write it down, I should get rid of it. Why not try? Besides, I am bored and I never have anything to do. Writing will be a sort of work. They say work makes man kind-hearted and honest. Well, here is a chance for me anyway. Snow is falling today, yellow and dingy. It fell yesterday, too, and a few days ago. I fancy it is the wet snow that has reminded me of that incident which I cannot shake off now. And so let it be a story apropos of the falling snow. Part 2. Apropos of the wet snow. When from dark error's subjugation. My words of passionate exhortation. Had wrenched thy fainting spirit free. And writhing prone in thine affliction. Thou didst recall with malediction the vice that had encompassed thee. And when thy slumbering conscience, fretting, by recollection's torturing flame, thou didst reveal the hideous setting of thy life's current ere I came. When suddenly I saw thee sicken, and weeping, hide thine anguished face, revolted, maddened, horror-stricken, at memories of foul disgrace. Nekrasov, translated by Juliet Soskis.